Plus 49.
Welcome to another episode of Plus 49. My name is Sigrid Arteaga, and today we have an exciting show lineup for you. By now, I am sure the festive spirit has caught up with you and with everybody here over the Christmas markets and the Glühwein all over town. That's why today we will take a closer look at this very special tradition. But first, let's wrap up with this week's highlights. With all the Christmas shopping and festive events, it feels like the days are flying by as we approach the end of 2024. Just last week, Spotify Wrapped dropped its annual recap. But before we dive into year's end reflection, let's focus on what's happening this week. In October, Berlin introduced a new online system for newcomers to complete their Anmeldung, essentially their registration process. Fast forward nearly 2 months after, and it seems that only 7.3% of registrations have been completed using this online service. The initial hope was to ease the burden on the Bürgerämter and free up time for the new appointments. However, and this is no shocker, so far just 5,500 registrations have been filed online. Berlin's chief digital officer, Martina Clement, remains optimistic about the early results of this new service. At least, she is optimistic. In the coming year, Berlin will launch a campaign to raise awareness of services which are newly available online, and Clement hopes that in the future around a third of the residents will use this online Anmeldung to register their address. Now, shifting gears a little bit. Troubles with the Deutsche Bahn are nothing new for commuters in Germany. Many users have grown accustomed to repeated delays and cancellations in the public transport. But this week, passengers in Berlin were left bemused when their local public transport app predicted waiting times of 995 minutes. Later, that wait time was corrected to an even more bewildering 1,002 or 16.7 hours. But the BVG quickly stepped in to clarify that they are working on improving the app and that those messages were simply errors. At least we know that BVG will work on that. Last weekend, and no, it was not last Christmas when I gave you my heart, was the second Advent, and that means we are way into December and this festive season. That's why today we will dive into the enchanting world of Christmas markets and their origins. Whether it's for buying gifts, sipping hot Glühwein, tasting delicious specialities, or simply spending time with friends, Christmas markets offer a delightful escape from the cold December days. Just wait for January in case you're missing this feeling of Christmas markets. But where did this beloved tradition actually came from? The first Christmas market in the German-speaking regions dates back over 600 years. For instance, the Bautzener Wenzelmarkt is said to have taken place as early as 1384. However, this early markets bore little resemblance to the festive gatherings we know today. Medieval townspeople used these markets primarily to stock up on food and essential items for the upcoming winter and Christmas celebrations. Alongside merchants selling goods, craftsmen such as basket weavers, shoemakers, and toy makers were granted the right to showcase their wares at these events. The tradition from a supply market to a festive celebration began in the 17th and 18th centuries. During this period, the nature of Christmas shifted from being solely a religious tradition to becoming a more family-oriented holiday. The importance of togetherness and gift-giving for children grew significantly, leading to an increase in food and drink offerings, as well as toys at the Christmas markets. As time went on, these markets continued to evolve. However, during World War II and the post-war years, Christmas markets nearly vanished. It wasn't until the resurgence of prosperity in the 1960s that this centuries-old tradition began to flourish once more. Today, Germany hosts over 2,500 Christmas markets each year, with the Leipzig Christmas market being one of the largest in the country, boasting around 300 stalls. But other major cities like Cologne, Berlin, and Stuttgart also feature vibrant markets that attract visitors from near and far. At these stands, you can find everything, from various types of crepes to roasted almonds, homemade wooden crafts, and even, this year, the very famous Dubai chocolate, which has made its way onto the Christmas markets. In addition to those large Christmas markets with hundreds of stalls and various attractions like rides or ice skating rinks, there has been a rise in smaller markets, often found in urban, country yards, or remote states. These are commonly referred to as Weihnachtsmarkt, Christkindlmarkt, or Adventsmarkt. The term Wintermarkt is also gaining some popularity as traditional Christian elements become less prominent. But while different in name, the markets are essentially the same. The choice of terminology often only varies by region, but all of them refer to the same joyful markets that grace the Christmas season. We're now with our guest from Control X, and she is Arikia, who's, I don't know, where does your name come from?
It's Greek, actually.
Ooh, very nice. And your last name is?
Milliken, it's Scots-Irish.
Okay, so you're a mix between American with a Greek-Irish.
No, I'm actually not Greek at all. I'm named after my mom's friend who was the flight attendant on her flight to Mykonos way back in the day. And she said if she ever had a daughter, she would name her Arikia. And so far, I haven't known another one other than the person I'm named after and me.
That's a very cool name. But you are an American citizen who just got her permanent resident for Berlin, well, for Germany.
Yeah, I was so excited to never have to go back to the Auslandabehörde, hopefully.
So tell us a little bit about that, because I am sure there are a lot of people with a lot of questions, and you've been through a process that we all hate a little bit too much, and you probably have already things that you say, like, if I knew that before, I would have done that differently.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was one of the unlucky ones. Or, I mean, I'm definitely one of the lucky ones, but basically the regulation for how many years you have to have lived in Germany before being eligible to apply for permanent residency changed from, I think, 7 to 5, right when I hit 7. So I was like, okay, well, at least it's happening now. And I think I technically could have pushed for eligibility at an earlier time, but I just didn't feel like I was prepared with all the documents to go through the process. So I actually wound up hiring an immigration attorney to help me just figure out everything that I needed. And it was well worth it because I... Well, there was actually like a funny thing that happened during the appointment, but I don't consider my German to be strong enough. And like, I'm not like formally credentialed in my German language skills. I mean, I've lived here for 7.5 years. I speak German every day and understand it, most of it, but I don't have a proper certification. So that was the main reason why I hired an immigration attorney to help with the process in case I got like someone who was in a bad mood that day. And it was really like just trying to find any excuse to deny me this visa.
What are the things that you saw when you already arrived on the interview or on the whole process that you would say, okay, I would definitely would have give this information to all of my friends or newcomers?
Yeah, I mean, when you say the whole process, do you mean from the very beginning? Because for me, it was Schengen extension visa in 2017, then an application for a blue card, which I got sent home crying, actually, the first time I went for that visa process, because I didn't have my diploma from my university with me. And I was like, I think that's in a frame somewhere in my mom's house. Like, do I really need the physical diploma? And she said, like, yes, and get out of my office now, wasting my time. And so I left and then contacted my university. And they said, no, you don't actually need the diploma. We'll just print this document and fax it to you with a stamp on it. Because, you know, Germans love stamps. And that should be enough for your visa. And when I went back, I had the same woman who was mean to me. I thought, like, oh no. And then she actually, when she saw it was me, she looked at my documents, said, okay, you have everything, you're done. Oh, and by the way, I'm so sorry. Last time you came in, it was my birthday.
Wow, she apologized.
Yeah.
Okay, we need to specify this once again. Someone from the Ausländerbehörde actually got herself to ask you to forgive her because last time she was rude with you was because of her birthday. This is unprecedented.
Yeah, I mean, some of us have bad birthdays. Like this year, my birthday was on American Election Day. So, you know, understandable. I don't think she really was asking for my forgiveness so much as just like offering an apology. Regardless of if I forgave her, but I was surprised.
It is definitely a very nice thing to go back to. At least you have a little bit, another idea of Ausländerbehörde. So once again, congratulations on everything.
Thank you.
But after 7 years in Berlin, I think one of the main questions we get to ask is, how did you decide to come to Germany and why Berlin?
Yeah, I get that one a lot. And my response is sort of that it was an accident. But the way I think of it is that the city of Berlin kind of just took me in the way that a cell takes in a piece of food. It's called like phagocytosis. It's just like Berlin said, like, you need to be here. So, okay, like, you're going to stay now.
I feel the same way.
Yeah, and it just felt really right. I'd been doing a lot of traveling before because I knew I didn't want to stay in the US. I think I knew as early as I was like 10 or 15 years old that I didn't want to live in the United States anymore. Or just in general, it wasn't going to be the place that I called home for my lifetime. Like I said, my mom was a big traveler, which is how I got my name. And she took me to Europe when I was really young. And even though I was too young at the time to appreciate the cultural aspects, I still kept those experiences in my heart. And it inspired me to go out and travel for myself. And so I came to Berlin for the first time in 2013. And I was actually meeting a lover here. He was British, and we had been together in Spain before. And then I was in Paris, and it's like, okay, why don't we meet somewhere that we've both never been? And we picked Berlin, and it was actually an awful time with him. I realized, like, because it was winter in Berlin, like all the magic from Spain was gone. But I got to know the city a little bit, but it wasn't until 2015 when I came back to go to the Chaos Computer Congress, CCC, and came to Berlin for New Year's after that I really started appreciating the aspect of the city that was why I wound up staying here eventually, which is the tech scene, and specifically around digital rights. And Berlin being kind of forward-facing in the global community of digital rights and people developing technology that protects privacy and furthers online freedom.
Which brings us to your project, and we will hear about that in our next segment. So you're a female founder in Berlin in winter. How do you survive Berlin in winter?
Well, I think a lot of it, a lot of the credit there goes to my birds because they are very linked to the sunshine. I have four cockatiels. The German word is Nymphensittiche, I believe. And they just light up my day every day.
Tell us about your birds, please.
I actually adopted them from the Tierheim animal shelter. Well, two of them. And then they duplicated. Now they're on birth control, so that can't happen again. But I'm very happy to have two baby birds in my home, as well as the parents.
How was the process of acquiring birds? And do you have, I'm asking, of course, I'm a dog owner, and it's a little bit easier to have a dog. I mean, you do have to pay here for taxes. You do have to pay for taxes. That is a thing. I'm sorry, I'm still very impressed by that. And you also have to have an insurance. Yes, an insurance, because Haftpflicht, because everything here is a must in some things. But I don't know, how does it work with birds?
Well, it was quite a long process to adopt them. And actually, when I contacted Tierheim at first, I just wanted to volunteer because I've been a parrot trainer for my whole life, pretty much. And I knew that during COVID, there were a lot of people who got birds and didn't really understand the responsibilities that are associated with taking care of them. So I figured I would just do some volunteer work in my home city of Berlin. And I reached out to Tierheim and they said, like, okay, well, it's COVID. We actually don't need any more people here because there's already too many and all of the like safety protocols and blah, blah, blah. But why don't you just take some birds because we have way too many? And I was like, okay, well, I'll come take a look. And then as soon as I went into the bird area, this little gray Nymphensittiche just clung to the fence of its cage and looked at me. And I said, like, oh, it's so cute. And I noticed what color band it had on its ankle. And it flew away. And then another bird flew up and started like gnawing on the cardboard. And I said, like, oh no, I hope that's not his girlfriend. And it was, and they're very so yeah, I had them watch to see that they were a bonded pair, and they also did a lot of screenings about my situation to make sure that I would be a responsible parrot owner and checked out like my apartment. You have to actually buy the cage first and show them that you have a cage before they'll tell you that you're allowed to adopt, which is a good thing, I think. Like, really make sure that these animals are going to good homes. And yeah, now almost 2 years later, they're quite happy with their new little family.
They are our families, and this is also a part of the shout out there, because for everyone who is looking to adopt a cat, a dog, a Meerschweinchen, or a Wellensittich, they are your family, and you have to treat them like that. So just take a look at what you need to do to get them to your house, and once they are in your house, treat them as such, as you're part of your family, as kind of your kids somehow. Even though I might think I am gonna get some backlash because a lot of people think that pets are not like kids, but I do have mixed feelings about that. So back from that beautiful song, we have our last segment with Arikia, and she has her own project here in Berlin, which is Control X. So Arikia, tell us about your project.
Yeah, so Control X is a project that facilitates the reclamation of ownership of journalistic content by the creators, by the journalists. And it's addressing a big problem in the industry. Like, basically, the journalism industry is in a state of collapse right now. And one of the things that happens with so many companies going bankrupt simultaneously is that the human historical record can be deleted or altered. in any kinds of ways, because when the websites go offline, if the journalists didn't retain the content in their own database, then the link is broken. And basically, like, everyone was relying on these media sites to reference history and figure out, like, what happened when, because some journalists reported on it. So what Control X does is enables creators to reclaim the content that they've already published on any kind of journalistic platform or self-published on the platforms that you might know just colloquially, like WordPress is kind of the classic one, and license the content to themselves in the blockchain so that there's forever a permanent record, or for as long as the blockchains will exist, there's a record of the publication, the content that's associated with it, which is encrypted and stored off-chain. So it gives all of the control over how that content is then mediated into the future back to the creator.
Okay, there's a lot of tech here. So just for mere mortals, what is blockchain?
That's a good question. I think a lot of people who work in blockchain don't even really know how to answer that question. But it's basically a ledger that keeps getting longer when new people add things to it. And so that ledger doesn't change. You can't go back and edit something that was put on the ledger 50 blocks back in time. Like, once the block is there, it's there, and you can only add more onto it. So it creates this record where there's a transparent record of all the transactions that have happened that were stamped into the blockchain.
Let's say I understood that, but let's make a shout out here. So everybody who's out there who is a journalist or a content creator should just go and look for Control X. What's the webpage?
It's ctrlx.world.
And there they can register and they can be part of the project. And also, if you're a VC and you want to contribute to the world of journalism, also go to
controlx.world. Or if you want to support in any way and you're not a VC, all support is welcome.
Perfect. Arike, thank you so much for being part of the Plus 49 podcast series and for sharing with us not only your Berlin, but also your pet Berlin, and also to invite us to adopt, which is, I think, a great initiative.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Plus 49. Ask a German.
Okay, so my question for Germans is, and I'm not totally sure that this is just a German thing, so you'll have to let me know if you think it is and if you have some explanation, or if it's like just something that everyone does that I don't know about. But it has to do with group chats. When there are events, especially like someone's hosting a dinner or a house party, they'll create a WhatsApp group and invite in all the people who they want to come, so the people can like see who else is coming, talk about like what to bring, whatever, like party details. But I've noticed that here specifically, people tend to write into these groups to say that they're not coming. And it's like they think they're being polite. And I think it's like the rudest thing I've ever seen. And I always have to like consider, okay, maybe I just need to keep this group closed so nobody does that, because it starts this like spiral of negativity with people who are just like, oh, well, that person's not coming, so now I'm not going to come. And then you just, everyone in the group is getting blasted by these messages of like, I'm not coming to your party. Like, why don't you just keep it to yourself and not show up? Like, probably no one will even notice. Or like message the host privately. Like, why do 50 people need to know that you're not gonna come to this party?
I think what you're describing is actually a quite common phenomenon here in Germany, especially if you're hosting a bigger party or gathering. I've also seen it happen before, and as you said, it kind of creates this spiral of more and more people telling the whole group chat that they're not coming, which doesn't really seem necessary. Most of the time they are not even saying why, they just state that they can't come. However, I think multiple factors play into this that have a lot to do with German culture and habits. For one, Germans value organization and good preparation. When throwing a party, they like to estimate how many people are coming in order to procure the right amount of food and drinks. Therefore, it is somewhat appreciated to decline and do so early so that the host can plan accordingly. Of course, after a certain number of people, you lose track of who's coming and who isn't either way. But for example, if it's only a small dinner party, it becomes more manageable. In some ways, I think it even belongs to German social etiquette to let the host and maybe even the other participants know that you're unable to attend. In general, this is not meant to be rude, but simply reflects a cultural norm of being considerate. Additionally, Germans are huge advocates of direct communication and straightforwardness. They will outright say if they can't or maybe even don't want to attend your party. And I have to say, I do actually appreciate it when people let me know beforehand whether they can make it or not. But I also don't understand why they have to do it over the group chat instead of just messaging me privately. Because most of the time, it is the case that people have a good reason for not coming. And if they message me privately, it's more likely they'll tell me said reason. And just knowing those helps me to understand their absence better. And I think this would also prevent a lot of miscommunication from happening.
This is the end of today's show. We hope you enjoy it. Remember, Christmas is only 2 weeks away. No pressure there. But it is time to buy your last-minute Christmas presents. And even maybe one of the Christmas markets around in town will help you with that. My name is Iris Arteaga. Thank you so much for being with us today. Thank you, Marlene, for being there. And hope to see all of us next week. Hasta la próxima.